Morning, thank you. This morning I'm going to be talking, I'm from Chicago, so I'll be talking about Safe in Chicago and really Chicago-based efforts using formative and process evaluation methods to pilot an HIV intervention in an STI clinic setting. Before I move forward, I just wanted to recognize one of our chief collaborators, the executive director of Chicago Women's AIDS Project, Kathy Christiller, who will also be here to, yay Kathy, who will also be here to answer questions at the end. And I don't have any relationships to disclose. I'm going to be describing some of our initial data from the formative and process evaluation of Safe in Chicago, and then I'll describe some of our lessons learned from implementation. Some quick background, Chicago Women's AIDS Project, or CWOP as it's known in Chicago, is a grassroots non-for-profit organization. They've been working for nearly two decades to provide HIV prevention in STI clinics. So annually we're talking about their work meeting the needs of at least 15,000 clinic patrons a year. In 2007, CWOP was funded by the Chicago Department of Public Health to develop and externally evaluate an innovative STI clinic waiting room intervention. So myself and another university-based evaluator got together with Kathy and her CWOP staff to develop Safe in Chicago. Safe in Chicago is an adaptation of two evidence-based HIV prevention interventions, or what you those of you who work in HIV and AIDS might know as DEBIs. We took, I'm seeing some head nods, okay. How many work in the field of HIV STIs? Okay, oh wow. All right, so we took two Debbies. We took Voices, and we took Safe in the City. We conducted formative and process evaluations with over 1,400 participants, and we assessed feasibility and acceptability across three different intervention modalities. So what is this Safe in Chicago? It consists of a 45-minute, single-session, video and discussion-based HIV-AIDS STI prevention intervention. It's delivered to STI clinic patients in the waiting room. So it's designed to encourage condom use and improve condom negotiation skills. So Safe in Chicago participants do a couple of things. First, they view the Safe in the City video, which presents a variety of STI risk scenarios and information on condom use. Next, they participate in a discussion. The discussion occurs among all patients in the waiting room, and the focus of the discussion is on the scenarios and the information presented in the video. Following the discussion, participants in the waiting room engage in role plays, and the role plays are designed to develop and enhance their skills in condom use and condom negotiation. What you really see in our Safe in Chicago model is from Voices, we borrowed, Voices is a video and group-based discussion, so we borrowed the group-based discussion tenets. And from Safe in the City, what we found is quite a modern video. We talked a lot about Safe in the City being like Sex in the City. The video itself is modeled with three shorter stories, so three vignettes. And we found that the current video paired with the discussion was something we wanted to explore more in the Chicago setting. We also partnered with DePaul University with senior art and art design students, and we created a social marketing campaign free of charge. It included posters, handouts, stickers, and social networking sites, and it was really exciting for us. What we know about prevention in the waiting room is we know the environment provides teachable moments. So we know this STI clinic waiting room setting is an opportunity to reach high volumes of high-risk patients at the quote-unquote teachable moment. Few studies, though, have examined the feasibility and acceptability of actually doing this. So feasibility, can we actually do this in our clinic settings? And acceptability, is this something that's really acceptable, something that's really going to work for our Chicago urban population? So despite data showing that these interventions are quite effective in terms of behavioral outcomes, few publications actually went forward exploring the formative and process side. And I thought, I thought I'd also just throw two definitions out here from the world of evaluation theory. In my work in evaluation, I often find formative and process used synonymously or used one and the same. And I wanted to use this slide to really just to show the distinction, but to also give you a window into the orientation of our evaluation team. So first, formative is from Michael Scriven. Formative evaluation is typically conducted during the development or improvement of a program or product. More specifically, it's often conducted more than once, so more than one time. And many times it's conducted by in-house staff. The goal is the intent to improve. So many program staff are in an informal sense constantly doing and conducting formative evaluation, what Scriven really calls the basis for improvement. One other distinction that I didn't list up there is Dr. Bob Steak talks a lot about formative evaluation in terms of being a cook and creating soup. When you are the cook creating the soup and you're tasting the soup, that's what we call formative evaluation. You're forming your soup. When your soup's ready to serve to the guests, that's what we call summative evaluation. So while I'm not going to talk about summative evaluation today, I really wanted to drive home the point that formatively, we set forward to really ensure we had a good soup. Soup with condoms, I guess, for Chicago. On the process side, this is from Michael Patton's fourth edition of Utilization-Focused Evaluation. In process evaluation, we set out to understand and document the day-to-day reality, you know, minute-by-minute, second-by-second reality of the clinic settings. For us, it meant unraveling what's actually happening, looking for major patterns, important nuances, you know, things that give a program its character. This is even more crucial because we were in three clinics in Chicago in three very different communities. So understanding the story of each of our clinics, understanding the unique story was essential to really doing this right. It required a sensitivity to both qualitative and quantitative methods, and really it meant spending a whole lot of time in the clinics and becoming intimately acquainted with the details of the program. We use these methods then to develop and pilot our intervention. We're big believers in evaluation at the beginning, at the middle, at the end, and throughout the process. It's also true in the sense when evaluation is part of all processes, your opportunities for influence and modification are really the highest. For us, that meant an ongoing feedback loop among and between staff, intervention facilitators, and the evaluation team. It also meant being flexible. It meant emailing, it meant text messaging, it meant random phone calls. As we set forward to do this, it very much meant being ongoing and responsive in many ways. Ultimately, these methods helped us do a couple of broad-based things. First is improving the multiple factors that influence program outcomes. It really was about capturing the story of implementation. It also was about ensuring that our program was designed to meet the diverse community's needs. As I mentioned before, we were in three different clinics in Chicago, and each clinic really had its own unique story to tell, and it was our job to capture that. And then lastly, it's quite helpful in terms of addressing a quite complex and multifaceted nature that one associates when talking about things like STIs and HIV and AIDS. Certainly that, to those of you in the audience that raised your hand, this is not new news, but I'd add another layer. It's not only, I'd add another layer for our setting because it's not only about the complex information, but it's the complex environment. Sitting in an STI clinic is, in many cases, not an enjoyable experience. So it was one thing to have great words and have a great plan. It was another thing to work in a context and really be respectful for where our patrons were at. So the three clinics that I mentioned, the first was in Lakeview, which is on the north side of Chicago. It's a very high volume clinic in a high income neighborhood. The next is Inglewood, again, another high volume clinic in a low income neighborhood. Inglewood's also on the south side of Chicago. And on the west side of Chicago, we were in South Austin, which is a low volume clinic in a low income neighborhood. Our feasibility and acceptability looked at three different arms. The first arm was the standard CDPH STI welcome to the clinic video. The second was the proven effective video-based intervention, so Safe in the City. And the third was our intervention, so showing Safe in the City and pairing it with the facilitator-led discussion. Across RN, we captured over 20, thank you, we captured over 2,600 pre- and post-test forms. There are the numbers across the three clinics. We gathered information in terms of demographics, STI history, condom use and negotiation attitudes, and client satisfaction. Our prevention specialists, who are our intervention facilitators, completed logs after each session to capture their perceptions, challenges, and their comfort levels. And we also obtained additional information via direct observations, staff interviews, key informant interviews, and weekly meetings. This slide here wanted to use to highlight a couple things. The first is at the top in terms of our N. I did mention Inglewood is a high volume clinic, and some of our initial data, we actually had some challenges organizationally with rolling out Inglewood, so the Inglewood and Lakeview numbers should be about the same, but they're not in terms of this data here. And then at the bottom, I just wanted to highlight the dominance of ethnic groups across Inglewood and South Austin being Black or African American, and then highlighting in the middle the Lakeview, which is a highly diverse community, and you'll see almost an even distribution across the African American, Latino, and white communities. This slide here, I just wanted to highlight in terms of some of our initial findings in terms of both being feasible, can we do this, and both being and also being acceptable. In terms of the video, what you'll see across all three clinics is that not everyone in each of the clinics is seeing the whole video. In Inglewood, 75% reported seeing all the video, almost 65% in Lakeview, and almost 48% in South Austin. In terms of the video relating to patrons' personal experience, we see high numbers from Inglewood, 75%, Lakeview, almost 79%, and South Austin, 95%. In terms of discussion group, so again, this is really what Safe in Chicago set out to do. Let's take a modern video, but let's put some didactic small group communication in there. In terms, though, of being a part of the discussion group, only 48.8% in Inglewood said they could participate in all, almost 66% in Lakeview, and 54.9% in South Austin. And here at the bottom, the question was around the information in the group discussion included examples that I could relate to. This was very encouraging and really did make a case for a discussion that was relevant to the audience. So we saw 82.7% in Inglewood, almost 89% in Lakeview, and 96% in South Austin. So some of our implementation-related lessons learned. We know clinic waiting rooms provide an arena to reach high numbers of patients with behavioral skills training interventions. So we know the settings there. The story of Chicago tells us that there might be quite a bit of interruption to those interventions. We know that video-based interventions are easily integrated into a high-volume clinic setting, so putting the movie in. This is especially true in high-volume clinics where a visit duration exceeds 1 hour. So while a visit that's longer than an hour might not be an optimal clinical outcome, it certainly is a great outcome to give a full behavioral intervention. We also know that the physical space and layout of clinics impacts the delivery of the intervention. We spend a lot of time in each of the clinics thinking about creative ways we could make use of, in all cases, a very small space. We also learned low-volume clinics do not provide the duration time necessary. So this was the case of South Austin. Folks got in and folks got out, and 45 minutes wasn't long enough. And then at the bottom, intervention facilitators and training. We found training was needed in a couple of areas. First, the actual intervention. Second, how to engage clients in role-playing. And third, what I really call facilitation crowd control was, you know, really spending time with our facilitators, you know, who understand fidelity, but the reality is numbers are being called left and right, and they need to understand how to keep things moving organizationally while still delivering the intervention. And then my last slide here, just some lessons learned from the organizational side of things. Communication, 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 and buy-in. For us, it meant endorsement by the CDPH medical director, clinic administrator meetings, rollout parties, so just coming into the clinics, bringing lunch, having a conversation, showing our intervention, getting feedback, and moving forward. And then also the social marketing materials. We also believe they were huge in terms of branding us and helping to legitimize a real Chicago-specific intervention. And then here at the bottom, decreases in funding, staff reductions, clinic closures, H1N1, so public health emergencies affected just the reality of doing this intervention. You certainly can't plan for environmental factors like this, but you have to, when you're telling their story, it's very important to address the implications. And so our next steps, I guess this is my last slide. Our next steps, first and foremost, right now it's about a lot of talking and information sharing. I know Kathy Christiller is spending quite a bit of time talking about the decreases in funding nationally, so federally, state, local, county, of our public health departments. We can talk about a really great program and share our great lessons learned, but if we don't have a clinic to work in, what good is our information? So a lot of what we're doing is sharing the story for why this is very positive and why this is working. Process evaluation, continuing to modify the intervention, tailoring the intervention to address clinics' unique issues. And when we really get in a sound position, talking a sound position in terms of both funding and our ability to track clients in clinics, we will move forward with a large-scale outcome-oriented evaluation. And just a quick shout-out to CWAP, our DePaul team, and the Chicago Department of Public Health. Thank you.